This is the Leading Second podcast, where we're on a mission to raise up uncommon church builders and be the kind of leaders our pastors would kill to have on the team.
What's up, Leading Second? Welcome back to season two of the Leading Second podcast. My name is Brandon Stewart, and we are so excited that you're here today. If you lead and you're not in charge, Leading Second is for you. And if that identifies you, welcome to your new tribe. Welcome to this space. If you're new here with us today, of course, the Leading Second podcast releases every Thursday morning, and we just consider it a huge honor to have a voice into your life and into your leadership on a weekly basis. I also want to say welcome back to our Millennials in Ministry series. We're hearing such great feedback on the series, and I hope that today's conversation continues to help you. If you're a millennial leader, I pray this is helping you have the right perspective for the very unique culture that we are navigating leadership in today. And for all of those of you who lead millennials, I pray that this helps you as well to get the conversation right. At Leading Second, we're not into labels, we're into leadership. And we want to try to strip away some of the labels that have been placed on this generation while at the same time calling us as millennial leaders higher to, I think, a biblical and sadly maybe more uncommon level of leadership. So welcome back to this conversation. So glad you're here. For our first segment today, we've crowdsourced another I Am Leading Second story. And this one's a bit different. Today, you're going to hear a very heartfelt statement from my friend of Leading Second, Bryce Birmingham. He's the campus pastor at Home Church in Calgary, which is a location of the bigger picture of Home Church based in Red Deer, Alberta, with campuses all over that province as well as around the world. Bryce wrote this on social media recently, and I just thought it was so well done, so well said. I wanted him to share it with you today on the podcast. So let's check out this I Am Leading Second story from one of our Leading Second tribe members.
This is my pastor. I don't usually do this on social media, but I want to write something personal today that is not flattery or fluffy in content. It's weighing deeply on my heart, and I trust it will be interpreted through the spirit it was written. I believe we can too easily miss the intended gift of God in our lives, so here we go. Last week was a huge week for me personally. It was what I would describe as brutal. What I didn't need in the midst of challenge was cousin, bro, Jay, or J-Dog. I didn't need dude, man, or bud. I was in need of the person God has both graced and placed into my life. Both Pastor Jakin Mullen and Pastor Becca Mullen pastor us in our marriage, our family, and our church. Every Sunday afternoon or Monday, I lean into his voice on live stream to hear the heart of God for my life and our church. Sunday message is the strong primary voice. A travesty too often made is to view or listen to the voice of our leaders through the lens of common, familiar, or entitlement. So easy to kill the authority and accountability because we desire a certain relationship status. I am thankful I am under authority and entrusted. We serve Jesus together. This is my pastor, heart and soul.
When I read Bryce's story on social media recently, I instantly thought of this story that I've taught on before. Maybe you've heard it, about an experiment that was conducted in a Washington, D.C. metro station. Let me read this to you, and then I'm going to comment on all this in just a minute. In 2007, on a busy morning in Washington, D.C., a man quietly took his place up against the metro wall. He pulled out his violin, he placed his hat on the sidewalk, and he began to play. For this performance, he had chosen six selections from Bach. Well over 1,000 people walked by as he began to play. Some stopped and listened briefly. Some slowed down their pace. Some even gave sympathy money. On several occasions, little children would stop to listen, but every time, their parent would pull them on. The beggar on the street in that metro station that morning was the world-renowned Joshua Bell. The story that he played was a violin valued at $3.5 million. Just 3 days earlier, people had packed a Boston theater at an average of $100 a seat to listen to him play. But today, his concert netted just a few bucks, mostly from sympathy. When he finished, only one woman recognized him and approached him to say hello. No one else acknowledged the magnificent talent that had just been on display. The music stopped, the violin went back in its case, and the master walked away. For nearly an hour, there had been greatness there, but almost no one recognized it or valued it. You know, when I heard Bryce's statement and I thought of the story, I thought of this statement: you can be looking straight at something great and miss it simply because you didn't honor what you saw. I guess today, before we get into our episode, I just wanted to shoot straight with all of us. As I travel and meet young leaders and in churches where God opens up opportunity for us to go, I feel like I see too many young leaders right now referring to their pastor as bro or as bud or their friend, or even worse, I see some leaders who don't just call their pastor bro, they actually want their pastor to be their bro. I think this comes out of our very anti-authority culture right now at large. And I just want to remind us all that God has placed our pastors in our lives for a reason and for a purpose. And that purpose is to lead us, to watch over us as men and women who will give account for how they lead us. And wouldn't it be just like the enemy to cause familiarity toward our leaders to creep in and pollute or neutralize the vital role that our pastors as leaders could play in our lives? I just love how Bryce said it on that day where he needed it. He didn't need a bro to show up. Keep in mind, he's also related to his pastor. He didn't need his cousin to show up. He didn't need his friend to show up. He needed a leader to show up. He needed his pastor to show up. And when we honor the leaders God has placed over us and we submit to their authority, and we go the extra mile for them, I just believe it opens up a whole realm of God's blessing in our lives that we wouldn't have otherwise. So Bryce, thank you for sharing your story. And I pray that every single one of us will be reminded today of the greatness that's sitting right in front of us in the form of our pastors and leaders. And we'll take some time to really examine our hearts and show them the honor where honor is due. If you'd like to share your I Am Leading Second story, or if you have a question that you'd like to hear us discuss on the podcast, I'd encourage you to reach out to us by emailing us at leadingsecond@churchforward.co, or reach out to us on leadingsecond.com, or join the Leading Second Forum on Facebook and message us there. We would love to hear you and feature you on an upcoming episode. Well, today we're continuing our Millennials in Ministry series, as we've mentioned, and specifically our topic of leading in a digital world. I pray that today helps you as we navigate this very important space, the digital space, and attempt to use it well for the kingdom. Today, I'm joined by three incredible guests. First of all, I'm joined by Anna Morgan, who's the executive pastor at City Church in Chicago, a great friend and returning guest to the podcast. Also, Pastor Pace Hartfield, the lead pastor of One Place Church in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, who's been on the podcast before and is also one of our team church contributors. And finally, Nicole Smithy, who is the co-founder and CEO of Iridescent Women. She's also on the team at Liberty Church in New York. I pray that our conversation helps you today. We're picking this up midstream, so if you missed part one, you may want to listen to part one as well. But let's rejoin my conversation with these three on leading in a digital world. With social media and with any digital platform comes the self-promotion trap, meaning I can equally post or do something to help someone, and I can post something to promote myself. And at the end of the day, maybe only I know my motives on it. And I see value in having confidence in what God has called you to do. I see value in being confident about the voice God has given you and confident in how you can help people and build the church. Like I see so much value in it. And then I also see so many posts that feel so inauthentic and where like, no, you posted that
to show us something great you did. You know, and yeah. I don't know where the balance is. Can we just lean into this conversation for a minute on, you know, I think we judge ourselves differently than we judge others in this. And how can we get this self-promotion thing right on social media? Where's the balance?
There's part of me that I don't know. And I totally agree with you, Brandon, because I feel the same way. I feel conflicted about it. Everything I read, particularly in because I think you all know I'm doing some research right now in a doctoral program into developing women leaders in the church. And everything I've read from secular women's leadership development people is basically that women tend to stand back, give team credit, be more communal in their approach. And so the secular thinkers say, hey, you got to self-promote. You got to get yourself out there, you know, look out for number one. No one else is going to do it for you. But then I think when it comes to a Christian leader, there's biblical dynamics about how we think about that I think are a little bit different. But I think sometimes the pace that we feel pressure to move our ministry forward can cause us to not wait for someone else to be like, hey, you should hear this thought. And we feel like we got to get it out there right now ourselves. And I think that having that longevity about how we think about development, like what Nicole was saying, can help us find the right balance, I think, in some of that. When we think about, okay, it's God's going to develop me over my lifetime. It doesn't have to be in the next 2 months, right? It can take some time. It takes a little bit of pressure off that, I think.
Well said.
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I think it's to your point and what Anna articulated really well. I think it's a complex conversation because, you know, there's a lot of different camps and what you think, and there's nothing wrong with confidence, and yet self-promotion, right? I get maybe the word like selfish ambition mm-hmm. is actually something the Bible talks has pretty strong thoughts on,
right.
And that it does not in any way reflect the character of Christ. And so what do we do then to enter these spaces in this world that a lot of times, you know, like if you're going to get people's attention, you have to self-promote. I mean, that's kind of like the industry of social media today or the digital age. So then how do we bring the character of Christ into mm-hmm. this? And I think social media is really interesting because in a lot of ways, I feel like it's a mirror and it reflects on a larger scale society. And then even sometimes can be an indicator of things within our own heart, even as we're scrolling. And, you know, one of the things that I've realized is that I can be pretty quick to criticize somebody else and go, oh, self-promotion, I'm unfollowing you. I can't take another like quote from you or another preaching clip today or whatever. But then if I were to do something like that, like I give myself the benefit of the doubt. One, because like, you know, I'm drawing people to Jesus and right. There's a message in this, or I'm trying to get this resource to somebody. I'm going to try to enter a conversation. So I think one way to approach this, just like having the right maybe posture of heart, I've learned is to practice a lot of humility in terms of like, hey, why can't I flip that a little bit? Like, why can't I self-examine my heart and have a filter and have accountability as to why I do what I do? But then when it comes to other people, why can't I just give the benefit of the doubt, you know, instead of being so quick to be like, ugh, I hate this, you know, or you're unfollow. Just to really take a minute and go, I probably don't know the whole story. And you know, you use your judgment after a while. If you feel like you want to unfollow somebody, unfollow them. Like, chances are they'll never know. It's not a big deal. But at the same time, I think to have that kind of posture of humility and being open to like, hey, where can I grow in this process? And where are my motives? And I do think that's a really personal conversation that should allow some corporate accountability as well, or some community accountability in the conversation. But the end of the day, like you have to feel like you're pointing people to Jesus, in what you do. And if that's not happening, I think it's worth having an honest conversation or having some checkpoints in your life to go, between you and God, and also the people that you really trust who will tell you the truth. Like, hey, is this really pointing people to Jesus? Or is it more about me right now?
Extremely well said.
Yeah. I deal with this on the daily of checking my motives of posts, and having moved from Dallas to the Pacific Northwest in northern Idaho, there's a sense for me, at least, I feel a little bit off the grid compared to where I used to be. And so the question that I literally have to ask myself daily when I'm posting something is this reflecting the glory of Jesus, or is this putting me in a position to bear the glory, to take the glory? And the reality is, and we've all seen it, like men, women, we're not meant to bear the glory. We're meant to reflect the glory. And when you begin to bear it, it looks ugly, you know, and it may get eyebrow raise. It may get you some attention, but it, I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to self-destruct if you, it's just too weight. It's too weighty. The glory of God is too weighty for man to carry, you know, you can't bear it. And so for me, it's always like, hey, in this moment, in this post, in this picture, am I being reflective? Am I reflecting glory? Or am I trying to bear something that's not mine to bear?
Wow.
I think I love that. I love that. I think the trap of bearing the glory for ministers is that we just like helping people. So sometimes we just want to take a little bit of the credit of somebody else's story or some sort of growth in ministry, or and so you could be sharing a testimony, you could be talking about what God did, but there's a little piece of you that's like, and look what I did. That's bearing the glory. And I think that's like, that's a really subtle thing that we need to watch, because, you know, one of the things I like Netflix. So, I'll admit it. Some people are like, I never watch TV. I don't have time. I just find time. I don't know. I like TV, but, I'm willing to admit it, but I like the makeover shows. I like the homes and the people makeover. And some of them are like complete people transformation shows. And some of them are quite moving, but it made me realize, like, actually just recently, I was like, you know, ministers are not the only ones who help people. Like, the world knows how to help people.
Right.
What makes us different is the gospel. Like, Jesus is really what sets our message apart. So I think we have to be really clear on our main mission when it comes to any sort of communication, and certainly in social. Like, really, how are we glorifying Jesus, and how are we, if somebody's going to look at this post, and this might be the one thing that they look at us like, in some way, did it glorify Jesus? And in some way, did it bring them really back to Jesus being the source of really what they need, and not us in any way? And, I think it's a really important thing to just be honest about and continue to check. And that's something I try to do pretty regularly, because we can all go down that subtle path. And we need to be back in sometimes.
I'm curious what you guys think, because I see some people trying to balance that tension by posting their vulnerable stuff. You know, if we're up with the whole idea being, if we're always posting our highlight reel and hiding the empty seats or that kind of stuff. And they'll, you know, do the no makeup post or, you know, those kinds of things. I'm curious what you guys think about trying to balance things out with the, I don't know, more negative posts, for lack of a better term.
I think it comes down to driver, because if you're posting, if you're trying to be authentic and show people, hey, I'm authentic and I'm real. Are you really? I mean,
totally.
Yeah, I agree. I think it comes down to motive, but there's something that, I'm not going to give the right credit to. Somebody they wrote a really beautiful blog about preaching from your heart. And one of the things that he talks about is this idea of like fake humility, like faux humility. And we've all kind of heard it in messages where it's like, you know, afterwards I got into church, I was going home and I got mad at my wife, you know, I'm a sinner too. It's like, that's kind of faux humility. Like, we believe you, but that's not vulnerability, because we all already assume that you have those moments. Right. You know, and I think we can kind of fall into that trap too, in the name of trying to be authentic, where we put those out there, but it's like, and I think people are smart. I think people are sometimes smarter than we give them credit. And especially, I think, a generation that's grown up on social media, they can smell a phony. It doesn't mean they don't buy into the system, but they can smell it sometimes and see it. So I think you hit on something. Like, if you're trying to be authentic for the sake of being authentic, I think you're missing the point. I think if we're trying to really connect with people and build bridges, then authenticity is going to be a byproduct of that. Not necessarily the first thing that we're thinking about in terms of what we post.
I think it's really important to look at the overall story. So, you know, when I'm looking at all of my posts, how often am I self-quoting versus how much am I giving honor to others? I think that was one of the most powerful decisions I made a couple years ago on social media, was I was going to try to use my social more to give honor to others than anything. Maybe that was just something my voice could be about. Would be about using social media to just entirely speak about other people. And I'm not saying every post I ever do does that, but I think I wanted that to be part of my story. You know, not just the pontifications that I have that I can do a meme on. You know, I don't mind a self quote from someone every now and then, but I think when you take into account the entirety of what someone posting, is that like 80% of what they're posting, or is it like 10% of what they're posting? And I've just tried to keep find the right balance on it all, I guess, is maybe the way I've tried to approach it.
Good.
I'm going to try to not just think post by post, but what's the story of my voice on social media. Let me ask you guys this. Here's an interesting one. We didn't talk about this, but let's talk about quickly about like online conversations and debates. Everyone loves a good Facebook debate, right? I think we've all probably done them and had to go back and delete a couple comments here or there. I just kind of have this idea that, I think we need to be clear as leaders, you know, about what we believe, but I'm just not entirely sure that it's helpful to be going into a debate kind of mindset on social media with people, because that stuff gets enshrined and people build impressions of us as leaders by how we talk online, and you can alienate someone, you know, toward your voice and what you would want to share with them in the gospel because you were debating a very small issue over here and turn them off. I mean, any thoughts, I guess, on how and when to use our voice when it comes to serious conversations on Facebook, social media, whatnot?
I would definitely say take caution if you're going to enter into that. I think we overestimate that people know where we're coming from. So, you know, you think, oh, well, they know my heart. They know who I am. Well, really, they don't. So you have to be so measured in what you say and how you say it. And you probably, if anything, if you're going to add your voice to a debate, I mean, I caution against it, but if you really feel like you have to, you better spend the lion's share of your time helping them understand where you're coming from, and they have a sense of humility and really the idea of, hey, I want to add into the conversation. I don't want to be the end all to the conversation, because otherwise it's a dangerous thing with what you're saying, Brandon. Totally. People will take a snapshot of a debate you feel like you have to take a stand on, and you assuming they know where you're coming from. I just think we take the liberty to say things because we think, oh, well, they know where I'm coming from, and they really don't. And our words are actually harmful, not helpful.
Well, and I think as the church, we just have to remember, I mean, our mission is the evangelization of this planet before Jesus comes again. And why die on a smaller hill than that? You know, why lose our voice over smaller issues than issues of the gospel? And I just think we run the risk. We run the risk of alienating people we could actually help. On an issue that doesn't carry the weight of people's eternity with Christ. And I just think it's a risk we run.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think those a lot of those Facebook debates, and not just Facebook. They tend to live the longest on Facebook, right, but you know, they're everywhere. I think they revealed to us that we as a society have no idea how to engage in healthy conflict. Yeah. We just don't know how to do it. So, why would we, apart from like the saving grace and power of Jesus, you know, to like learn those things. So I don't think we should be shocked by it. And I do think one of the things that social media does is it's like that extra barrier. It's like, you know, in LA, I was always in a car. And so sometimes I get really angry at complete strangers, but I felt like I could think certain things about them, mumble them under my breath, go right back into a worship song. And it was so much more acceptable than face-to-face having that same conversation with them. Like I'd never do it because there's a barrier of car to car, right? Yeah. I'm admitting my humanity here, but when I moved to New York, there's no more car.
Yeah.
There's a subway and there's people and they're right next to you and they can hear everything and they can see your facial reactions and your body language. So you're just so much more aware of how what you bring to the table affects other people. And you also see the humanity that they bring to the table and them as a whole person. We've completely lost this with social media. We have to be really intentional to remember there's a person behind that account. There's a face, there's a story, there's a life, there's a day that they had. And social media conveniently leaves that out. So it gives this, this great opportunity for connection. But a lot of times we end up objectifying people in a lot of different ways or putting them easily into categories. So we don't really know how to do healthy conflict, I think, as a society, especially through a medium that makes it harder for us to really see people as whole people. Wow. That being said, I think part of discipleship is not veering away from the conversations. It's just having the right avenue for them. So I would also steer away from an environment, and you ultimately need to get direction from your lead pastor and really be submitted to that. But it's like, okay, yeah, don't get in an argument about this issue on social media because of all these dynamics we just talked about. But you should have a pulse on what's going on with the people that you're discipling and leading and how it affected them. So you could have some one-on-one conversations and really dialogue with them and create an environment where people feel like it's a safe place to converse and talk, because that's really the way of discipleship as well. And it's teaching people not to run from these issues, but really be able to look at them through the lens of, okay, well, what does the word of God have to say? What is the heart of Jesus behind this? And how can we lean into these things? Because I think if we don't do that within our spheres of leadership, we run the danger of just saying, okay, guys, we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to get into debate. But if we never talk about it, then we're becoming really irrelevant to things that matter to a whole lot of people. So I do think there needs to be a balance to that. It's not social media, maybe, that's the avenue for those kind of conversations, but we should be diligent about creating an environment for those conversations to happen in a really safe and sacred space.
Very, very, very well said.
I think one other thing too is recognizing that as leaders, and especially I think we're all talking about leaders who are leading from the middle somewhere, is that your voice is not just your own voice. In social media, you're stewarding your pastor's voice, you're representing your entire church, that when you come into a conversation online, as individualized as our culture is, you're not just an individual that you're representing. And I think having an awareness of that, and I think it's worth for teams, for church teams to have conversations about, hey, what do we want our online culture to be? Like in terms of how we engage when we write, when we're engaging digitally in that space. I think it's a great conversation to have.
Gosh, I've really enjoyed this conversation today. I want to ask you guys one more question before we land the plane here. And let's talk about, I guess, using wisdom and staying safe in our digital spaces. So this to me could be everything from, you know, having a conversation via text that should happen in person, all the way to, you know, we live in a very password protected world now. We live in a very private world. To look at someone else's phone is awkward, right? It's like their personal space. And so many of our interactions with people are behind passwords, but yet it can give the enemy a foothold and can lead to inappropriate conversations. And disappearing messages don't help, you know, in that at all. And I've seen a number of young leaders get affected by just being casual about their digital use, and it ends up, you know, impacting them. They enter into inappropriate aspects of relationships with other people or whatnot. And I just think my heart is that every young leader listening to this, that in 20, 30 years, you're standing healthy, thriving in ministry and have given the enemy no foothold. And that includes our digital life. Can we just lean into that for a second? How can we lead and stay safe in this area? And give ourselves great layers of accountability when it comes to how we're using our digital platforms as leaders.
Some of the things that we've been talking about in our team is things like, obviously big number one is don't assume anything is private. But literally once you type anything into anything, it's stored on some hard drive somewhere. You just assume that all digital communication is public, all of it. You just have to make that, you have to function from that assumption. And so a part of that, like in the same way that you would build accountabilities in a group, you know, by being in groups of three, we encourage our team, like, hey, include someone else in the digital conversation. Don't engage alone in any kind of digital sphere.
Like practically for me, that's something that I do, whether it's, you know, text or any kind of communication. People on our team, guy to girl, you know, my assistant is always attached, or my wife is always attached, so that it's not just me and one other. And then another side is my wife has like total access to every device I have, every password I have. And, I've created, you know, boundaries, if you would, safeguards that would keep me accountable, you know, to making sure that, you know, I'm being safe there. But then also, very, very practical is, I think in our day-to-day lives, making sure, we're waking up every day and at some point having an introspective moment with Jesus to say, you know, search my heart and know me, you know, and give me wisdom and help me enter into this day, into this conversation in a safe way.
I guess that is all very, very good. I just want to echo what everybody said. I don't really have tons new to bring to the table, except that I'm kind of surprised that people think that those things are private. I'm honestly a little shocked, and I don't mean that to be rude or anything, but I think it speaks to how ingrained the culture of like Snapchat and different things really is, or the effect that that kind of media has had, because we think like it'll go away, but it's quite the opposite. It's actually more exposed than generations before doing things they shouldn't have done. So I actually think that social media could be a really great like tool of added accountability, just if you have that understanding, if you really, really recognize that it isn't hidden, I think, and see it that way, and then invite people into it. I mean, you know, I love what Pace said, like my husband can always grab my phone and see anything. Like a lot of times I'm like the worst at, I have like the worst passwords, you know, anybody, like I very freely, like other people have it. Maybe to my own detriment, but in terms of like, I don't know if I should give it away as freely as I do as I'm talking right now, but I think that idea of, I'm going to change my password. But I think that idea of like, what do I have? I think I've lived my life. Like you kind of have to have that mindset of like, it's all going to be public. It is already to some degree, just maybe not the public has seen it, but at any time it's ripe for that. So anybody should be able to have eyes on this and see it through the filter of like, yeah, there wasn't inappropriate behavior here. So I think that's just a reality check for everybody, but it also is a built-in safeguard if we think of it that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, I love you all. I love what you're doing in all of your lanes in your churches. Thank you so much for having a heart for the kingdom, having a heart for younger leaders. Thankful for each of you. Thank you for contributing to Leading Second, too. We highly value each of your voices.
Thank you for having us, man.
Yeah, thank you. It was really great.
Appreciate you.
If this podcast has resonated with you, I want to encourage you to help us out by becoming a podcast ambassador. Hit that subscribe button, however you're listening to this today. and consider sharing it with your team or with someone you know, someone you feel like this could help. We also hear of people going through this, not just in church environments, but in their workplaces. And I pray wherever this lands, it'll help us all get it right as people who lead when you're not in charge. Also, leave us a rating or a comment and reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. I also wanted to let you know that if you'd like to bring Leading Second to your church, we have a free of charge online course offered now on leadingsecond.com. This is a way for you as an individual or for your entire team or staff to go through our first round of Leading Second teaching, all available on leadingsecond.com. We would love to just be a resource to you and your team as you attempt to lead well and be uncommon church builders. So Leading Second, we love you. We're so thankful for you. So thankful to have a voice into your life every single week. Until next time, Leading Second, let's run strong for the kingdom and lead in an uncommon way together.
For more information, check out leadingsecond.com or join the Leading Second Forum on Facebook.